The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. As I said on yesterday's show, this is a big week for news in the United States and in Great Britain, with the election coming up here on Thursday here in the UK. And then, of course, the ongoing impeachment saga in the United States and the release of the IG report just yesterday as well. We'll come to all of that in just a moment. But I thought I'd just open by saying a few things about the fires in Australia. And also, they had this volcanic eruption yesterday in New Zealand. But the bushfires in Australia, it's so bad now that there's some stories talking about smoke alarms going off in Sydney's main business district. There's just a thick cloud of smoke covering cities in Australia. Flights are being delayed. Ash is washing up on the cities of, some of the more famous beaches down under. Richard says that Australia keeps an air quality index, and 200 is defined as hazardous. Today it reached 2,552, so it's off the charts basically. The worst air quality they've seen in quite some time. Temperatures are hitting 108 degrees Fahrenheit. It's one of the worst ever droughts that the nation has faced. Nearly 7 million acres of fire have burned. So far, 4 people have been killed. Hundreds of homes have been destroyed. And then, as I say, you have this volcanic eruption in New Zealand, in, I guess, a place called White Island. There were 47 people visiting the island when the eruption happened. And it left 5 people confirmed dead, and quite a few others that have had to be rescued. Richard just pointed out this, or we brought this together primarily because of what Mr. Hilliker wrote in the latest magazine, the Trumpet magazine, about so-called natural disasters. In the magazine, we referred to the California fires and the hundreds of thousands of acres that have been scorched as a result of these ongoing fires. Here again, hundreds and hundreds of structures have been destroyed. Mr. Hilliker covers that running water is running out in South Africa as that country faces its worst drought in hundreds of years. He mentions the flooding in Venice. Well, these articles that are coming in this week regarding Australia and New Zealand. Australia is suffering through its worst drought in 400 years. You keep hearing about all of these unprecedented so-called natural disasters. You have farmers in Australia that are throwing their arms up in the air saying, that's it. You know, give us some assistance so we can get out of this and move on to something that's a little bit easier to make a living in. Here again, look back at this, or if you haven't read the latest issue yet, make sure that you look for Mr. Hilliker's piece in the latest Trumpet magazine. He says, the list of global problems being blamed on this single cause is rapidly growing. He's referring, of course, to climate change. Man, or at least the scholars, they blame it on climate change. They include, but are far from limited to, more floods, more droughts, more wildfires, more heat waves, rising temperatures, dropping temperatures, increased tornadoes, stronger hurricanes, rising sea levels, shrinking Arctic sea ice, higher ocean acidity, less drinking water, imperiled agriculture, expanding desertification, multiplying disease-carrying insects. It says then climate change is blamed for the resulting deprivation, malnutrition, starvation, economic inequality, civil unrest, population displacement, and so on. They just blame it all on climate change, which of course means that we have nothing to do with it, or I guess the way they view it is those who are expanding their carbon footprints. But it leaves sin, spiritual sin, out of the equation. It removes the Bible from what we see happening. They try to explain it away. All of these prophecies, and Mr. Hilliker refers to quite a few of them in his article, Psalm 148, Nahum 1, the book of Job, Leviticus 26, of course, and even Jesus Christ, what he said there in Matthew 24. It's prophesied. Look up that article when you read the next trumpet, or, of course, you can look at our booklet that's been around for a few years, Why Natural Disasters? Well, as I say, with respect to this week regarding the U.S. and Britain, a big news story, day after day, the IG report, and then the Judiciary Committee, they carried on with their impeachment hearing yesterday, which when I just turned on the live feed, I saw two lawyers that I think a week or two ago were up with the congressman asking questions of the witnesses. There have been no fact witnesses. The closest we had was Ambassador Sondland. I think they've interviewed 17 people, or we've seen 17 witnesses, and yet none of them have reported any facts. Sondland, of course, exonerated the president. But here I'm thinking, well, why are we listening to testimony from the staff lawyers that just a couple of weeks ago were the ones asking the questions? It's a big joke. I'll come to that in just a bit. But with respect to the IG report, something like 450 pages that comes out on whether or not there was FISA abuse. And I guess the report found that the FBI was justified in starting the investigation back in 2016. And there's some powerful people that very much disagree with that. We'll come to that a little bit later. But that had the Democrats celebrating. You see, we were justified. But then you look at all of the other things in the report, and really, given that it was put together or headed up by someone appointed by Barack Obama, to me, it's a sign of much worse to come. And I think Attorney General Barr and the U.S. Attorney John Durham said as much yesterday with their statements. But let me just step back for a moment and give you an overall summary of what we're seeing. And we're seeing it on many different planes. When the Democrats investigate themselves, and we've seen that often in the last few years, when they investigate themselves, there might be mistakes or wrongdoing, but there is never, ever an evil, malicious intent. Never. There's never an evil motivation. The motivations are as pure as the driven snow. That's what we learn when we see them investigate themselves. As I say, this Inspector General, he was appointed by Obama several years ago. But when the Democrats are investigating their political opponents, even when there's no evidence of any wrongdoing whatsoever, they know there's malicious intent. They absolutely know it. They know there's some kind of evil design. They know that conservatives are motivated by some kind of animus. Remember the Barr memo from June of 2018, where he critiqued the Mueller investigation, and he said that to establish guilt, all that remains is evaluation of the president's state of mind to divine whether he acted with a corrupt motive. So there's got to be some kind of obstruction of justice. Well, but he didn't do anything, Barr said. So how could you interpret this to be an obstruction when there's no original crime to begin with? Well, we just know. We're able to tell that there's some kind of corrupt motivation here. They know there has to be. Isn't it interesting? You look at the impeachment circus. There's no evidence of wrongdoing. And yet there's all of these charges. We'll come to that in just a second. On the other hand, and you can see it with the Hillary Clinton investigation, James Comey laid it out there in 2016. Here's what she did wrong. And he went on for like 10, 12 minutes. She did this wrong. She did this wrong. She did this wrong. But we get to the end of it and decide there's no corrupt motivation. There's no evil in her heart. She didn't mean to. It was just a little bit of incompetence. And that, to me, is the gist of yesterday's report. All of this wrongdoing. Detail after detail of deceit, lies, withholding exculpatory evidence. And yet the FBI was justified, and there certainly wasn't any political bias influencing the investigation. The New York Times today, this is its featured story, a long-awaited report by the Justice Department's Inspector General delivers a scathing critique of the FBI's handling of a wiretap application. Just a scathing critique. Even the New York Times sees it as a scathing critique, but it also punctures many conspiracy theories. Well, we can go after Donald Trump now and all of his conspiracy theories that they were coming after me. That evidently, according to these commentators, all of that's been punctured. Well, Attorney General Barr and John Durham disagree, as I say. But look at the House Democrats. There were reports today saying that they're preparing to unveil two articles of impeachment, abuse of power and obstruction to Congress. And you'll notice there's nothing in there about quid pro quo, bribery. Really, nothing to speak of about Ukraine. So they leave out the obstruction of justice charge. That was what was sort of implied in Robert Mueller's report, but what Attorney General Barr didn't agree with. And then again, the bribery charges. But as we've seen, that doesn't matter what the actual charge is, because they'll find something. They know there's evil here. They know there's evil in the president's heart. So they've just got to go find the crime. And if nothing sticks, then they'll just move on to something else. Alan Dershowitz, he's the liberal attorney who on Fox News Sunday night said about the Democrats' approach is that, you know, quoting some KGB agent, you show me the man, I'll find you the crime. Here's Dershowitz, clip 8.
What they're trying to do is what the KGB under Lavrenti Beria said to Stalin, the dictator. I'm not comparing our country to the Soviet Union. Just want to make sure it never becomes anything like that. Beria said to Stalin, show me the man and I'll find you the crime. And that's what some of the Democrats are doing. They have Trump in their sights. They want to figure out a way of impeaching him. And they're searching for a crime. First, they came up with abuse of power. Not a crime. It's not in the Constitution. So now they're saying bribery, but they're making it up. There is no case for bribery based on even if all the allegations against the president were to be proved, which they haven't been, but even if they were to be proved, it would not constitute the impeachable offense of bribery.
There's no evidence of an offense here, is what he's saying. This man who voted for Hillary Clinton, by the way. There's no evidence of a crime. But they'll continue searching until they find one, because he was guilty the moment the United States elected him in November of 2016. Eli Lake at Bloomberg, he's commenting on the IG report from yesterday, saying the Inspector General's report finds that the initial investigation was deeply flawed, but nonetheless justified. The senior officials and agents who opened the investigation, says the report, made serious mistakes, but were not motivated by political bias. He said the Democrats might want to show a bit more humility because there's some condemning evidence in this report. It says the report is devastating about the FBI's court-ordered surveillance of a Trump campaign aide in what was known as Crossfire Hurricane. The investigation into whether Trump and his campaign colluded with Russia's interference in the 2016 election. Listen to this. It says, in particular, Inspector General Michael Horowitz's report concludes that the Bureau's application, this is the FISA warrant, the application for a warrant to electronically spy on a former Trump campaign aide, Carter Page, was riddled with errors of fact, and omitted exculpatory information. It says the application relied on political opposition research from a former British spy, Christopher Steele, whose credibility was exaggerated in the surveillance warrant application to a secret court. In other words, this proves what Devin Nunes said in his memo. And he was attacked for releasing that memo in early 2018, saying that they relied on the Steele dossier, the dirty dossier, to get these FISA warrants four straight times. And here comes the IG report from Michael Horowitz, an Obama appointee, who basically says Nunes is right. And it was Schiff who lied in his memo, saying that, well, they didn't really rely upon the dirty dossier. That really wasn't the main evidence. There was all this other evidence. And Schiff knew. He knew about the evidence that Devin Nunes knew about. But he chose to deceive the American people. And it was, of course, a big war between the two memos. Well, who's telling the truth? Is it Nunes or is it Schiff? Regarding these warrants to spy on a U.S. citizen, this Inspector General's report says that there were numerous instances, this is a quote from the report, numerous instances in which factual representations in those applications were inaccurate, incomplete, or unsupported by appropriate documentation. It was just flawed through and through. And yet you have people like Jim Comey who were running victory laps yesterday. It's just astounding, the arrogance of these people. The IG identified numerous serious factual errors and omissions in applications that undercut certain allegations in the FISA applications. That's from the IG report. And of course, the IG report is just an internal investigation. Horowitz doesn't even have the power to go after anyone, to prosecute anyone, but Durham does, which is why it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next round, whenever that may be. But here they were, using bad information, surveilling an American citizen, and even when they came upon the exculpatory evidence, they didn't stop spying. They just continued right on with it. They continued with the lie. Congressman John Ratcliffe, he, I think, sums up the findings from the IG report best, at least in the clips that I saw earlier this morning. This is Mr. Ratcliffe on Brett Baer's program last night, clip one.
So there's two important things that went on here. One, did the FBI meet the very low threshold for an articulate factual basis to reasonably suspect that there was a threat to national security? The Inspector General made the conclusion that they met that very low threshold to get the investigation started. The problem for the FBI and for Democrats that want to somehow declare this as a victory is everything after that is an indictment of the process. Even if there was a basis to open it, everything that came after it was exculpatory. There was no reason to continue it. And the second part of this that's really important is when they got to the stage of a FISA application in October, as you see in here, this report is just completely full of what the Inspector General politely says are errors and omissions. Another way of saying that are lies, misrepresentations, false statements, and the failure to turn over exculpatory information.
Is that what strikes you most about this report?
Absolutely. So it's a validation of every one of us that had been saying there was FISA abuse.
FISA abuse. It validates the fact that there was abuse over and over again. Okay, so maybe they met the low threshold, as he says there, to start an investigation, but everything that they turned up in the early stages of that so-called investigation. It was turning up exculpatory evidence. So they had no reason to continue the investigation. Certainly not months into the Trump presidency. And furthermore, certainly not into a two-year special counsel investigation led by Bob Mueller, something that Jim Comey said that he wanted to start. He wanted to trigger that. So this went on for years and years. Eli Lake says, on its own, the fate of Page is not important. That's Carter Page. It matters because his surveillance gives the public a window into how the process for obtaining electronic surveillance warrants from a secret court can be easily gamed. That's what they did. They gamed the system. Lake says, all of this counts as an abuse of the FISA process. Not too long ago, this was something that concerned Democrats who led the charge to create the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act after horrendous surveillance abuse was uncovered in the 1970s. That legislation created a role for the courts to oversee the surveillance state's electronic eavesdropping. See, it used to be the Democrats. They wanted FISA there in the first place to stop this sort of nonsense, to prevent people from coming along and gaming the system. And yet that's exactly what they've done. And like the president said yesterday, the reason they're acting the way that they are now is because they've been caught. Caught red-handed. Well, look at what the IG report revealed. It shows that the Steele dossier was a complete and total fraud. Of course, we knew this. But now it's verified. It shows that Carter Page, the FBI knew he was innocent, and yet they just continued to game the system by lying about him. It confirms the Nunes memo from last year, as I said. Quite a lot, and I'm sure more will turn up in the weeks and months ahead. I think probably the biggest development, at least with respect to this IG report, the biggest news from yesterday is the statement that John Durham released, and then Bill Barr as well, William Barr, the Attorney General. They waited. They let the IG finish his report. It's been delayed for months. It's finally posted, and then these two spoke. John Durham, in his statement, said, I have the utmost respect for the mission of the Office of Inspector General and the comprehensive work that went into the report prepared by Mr. Horowitz and his staff. However, our investigation is not limited to developing information from within component parts of the Justice Department. We're not limited to just the component parts within the DOJ. It's much broader than that. As you probably have heard, Durham and the Attorney General, they've been traveling abroad. They've been gathering evidence. And this is, as we learned a few weeks ago, or I guess a couple months ago now, this is quite unlike the IG report. Durham's effort is a criminal investigation. He said yesterday, our investigation has included developing information from other persons and entities, both in the U.S. and outside the U.S., based on the evidence collected to date. And while our investigation is ongoing, last month we advised the Inspector General that we do not agree with some of the report's conclusions as to predication and how the FBI case was opened. In other words, the one thing the Democrats were singing about yesterday is that we had the right to start the investigation, and it wasn't motivated by politics. Durham comes along, and he's doing the criminal investigation, and he says, I have evidence that makes me believe it's not something that was warranted. I don't agree with the conclusions in the IG report. Here he is talking about uncovering new evidence. Now, the Attorney General, for his part, he also made it clear that he doesn't agree with a couple of those conclusions reached by the IG. Barr said yesterday, the Inspector General's report now makes clear that the FBI launched an intrusive investigation of a U.S. presidential campaign on the thinnest of suspicions. The thinnest of suspicions that, in my view, were insufficient to justify the steps taken. It says, it is also clear that from its inception, the evidence produced by the investigation was consistently exculpatory. Everything that they turned up, everything that they found, even in the early stages of that investigation, it proved the president and his administration, it proved that they were innocent. So there's no evidence of wrongdoing, but they know there's evil intent. They just know it. They're able to divine it. But then you turn the investigation on them. And yeah, well, there's 17 errors. Yeah, there's a lot of wrongdoing. Even James Comey in his column, which he posted, by the way, within a couple of hours of the IG report being released. He had his column for the Washington Post ready to go. He was ready to start bragging. Well, like Eli Lake said, the Democrats might want to be a little more humble right about now, because that's a condemning report. Even if there was justification in starting the investigation early on, because when you look at what they did to keep it going, well, you can see why the president continues to say that this was a witch hunt from the beginning. This was politically motivated. It was a hoax. And the tables will soon turn. This is what he said yesterday, President Trump, clip two.
Well, they fabricated evidence and they lied to the courts and they did all sorts of things to have it go their way. And this was something that we can never allow to happen again. The report actually, and especially when you look into it and the details of the report, are far worse than anything I would have even imagined. What they were doing and what they would have done if I didn't make a certain move that was a very important move, because it would have been even worse, if that's possible. And they might have been able to succeed. This was an overthrow of government. This was an attempted overthrow. And a lot of people were in on it. And they got caught. They got caught red-handed. And I look forward to the Durham report, which is coming out in the not-too-distant future. It's got his own information, which is this information plus, plus, plus. And it's an incredible thing that happened, and we're lucky we caught him. I think I'm going to put this down as one of our great achievements, because what we found and what we saw, never, ever should this happen again in our country.
That's the president yesterday responding to the release of the IG report following his being briefed on the inspector general's findings. They got caught red-handed, he said. And he anxiously is awaiting the Durham report. And he sees this, and he's made this statement before, but he sees this as one of his great achievements. Exposing this corruption, exposing this evil. And he talked about how worse it would have been had it not been for a decision that he made. And I guess I'm assuming that's firing Jim Comey. But they got caught. Speaking of the former FBI director, the current FBI director, he made some interesting statements yesterday regarding this investigation, the IG report, and the so-called deep state. This is FBI Director Christopher Wray in an interview yesterday. You hear some from the reporter as well. Clip 9.
As far as you know, based on the findings in the Inspector General report, is the FBI, was it part of some deep state?
Well, I think that's the kind of label that is a disservice to the 37,000 men and women who work at the FBI. That's not a term I would ever use to describe our workforce, and I think it's an affront to them.
That's a term the president uses quite often. And so you wonder how much longer this relationship is going to continue. The president and the current FBI director, he tweeted this morning, by the way, the president, I don't know what report current director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, was reading, but it sure wasn't the one given to me. This is a tweet from the president, says with that kind of attitude, he will never be able to fix the FBI, which is badly broken despite having some of the greatest men and women working there. So he wants to fix it. Attorney General Barr wants to fix it. Seems like John Durham does. It doesn't seem so much that way for Christopher Wray. This will be an interesting little wrinkle to follow as well. Well, going back to Jim Comey, as I said, he had his op-ed ready for printing within an hour or two of the release of the IG report. And Comey here is celebrating. He says, for 2 years, the president of the United States and his followers have loudly declared that the FBI acted unlawfully in conducting a counterintelligence investigation of Russia's interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. They repeatedly told the American people that the FBI had done all sorts of bad things, such as tapping Donald Trump's wires during the campaign, opening an investigation without adequate cause, with the intent to damage Trump, and inserting secret informants into the Trump campaign. He says, on Monday, we learned from a report by the IG that the allegation of criminal conspiracy was nonsense. There was no illegal wiretapping. There were no informants inserted into the campaign. There was no spying on the Trump campaign. So now, no spying, no informants, nothing. It was just a simple, a garden variety type investigation that went on and on, and then it triggered a special investigation headed up by Bob Mueller, even as all the evidence they turned up was exculpatory. Comey says the Russia investigation was complicated. Not surprisingly, the inspector general found mistakes, 17 of them, things the FBI should have done differently or better. Now, this is about Comey's FBI. This is about his leadership at the FBI. This is an indictment against Jim Comey, this IG report. And yet there he is celebrating, as he's done in the past. You could go through his Twitter feed and see. It says, that's always unfortunate, but human beings make mistakes. See, it just kind of happens. We're human beings. There's going to be mistakes. But look, you have to understand, there's never, ever, ever any kind of corrupt motivation in our hearts. Never. Not in Vindman, not in Yovanovitch, Strzok, Page, Bruce Orr, Jim Comey, Andy McCabe, Jim Baker, John Brennan, James Clapper. They made mistakes. They might have even lied a time or two. But they never have ever had any kind of corrupt intent or motivation. No animus there. No political bias. No political motivation. And yet here is all this evidence. Comey himself, 17 mistakes the FBI should have done differently. And he says, that's always unfortunate, but human beings make mistakes. He said, Inspector General reports are valuable because they offer the chance to learn. Horowitz also concluded that a low-level FBI lawyer doctored an email as part of the administrative process leading to the renewal of the application for electronic surveillance of the former campaign advisor. Although it's not clear what difference that made, it is still potentially serious. A lawyer at the FBI doctoring an email, changing the content of an email, reversing the meaning in order to continue to get the FISA warrant. And Comey justifies it by saying, well, we're really not sure that that even impacted anything. All of this wrongdoing, but certainly no criminal intent. Comey says, well, the wait is over. And those who smeared the FBI are due for an accounting. In particular, Attorney General William Barr owes the institution he leads and the American people an acknowledgement of the truth. Wow. This is the former FBI director who presided over the agency as it was making these 17 mistakes. And now he's calling out William Barr. Listen to what he said yesterday in an interview. He was all over the airwaves as well. He was tweeting, he was writing an op-ed piece, and then he was on TV. Clip three.
From your experience in the Justice Department and the FBI, I mean, is Attorney General Barr working in the role that he should be, in his constitutionally mandated role, or do you believe he views himself and the president views him as the president's attorney?
The Attorney General has to be the steward of an organization that's apolitical. So he has to be both a political appointee and a guardian of the apolitical nature of investigations. The justice statue wears a blindfold because you cannot be peeking at your political boss or your friends when you're making decisions. It's certainly hard to explain a lot of his conduct over the last year as consistent with that role of balancing the political and the apolitical. He seems to have leaned on the political entirely.
That's Jim Comey saying it's hard to explain the Attorney General, his conduct over the past year. He's politically motivated. He's biased. He has evil intent in his heart. He's just the wingman for Donald Trump, to use the terminology Eric Holder once used. Back to this op-ed. Comey says, unfortunately, it appears that Barr will continue his practice of deriding the Justice Department when the facts don't agree with Trump's fiction, pointing to his personally commissioned review of the FBI's case opening. Barr has declared it so too soon to conclude that the FBI was right to start an investigation. If his goal is simply to support the president's conspiracy theories, it will always be too soon to acknowledge the facts. This is pretty audacious. This is Jim Comey, who certainly is not holding back. No humility needed here. He says, finally, as the leader of an institution, this is, again, a three-paragraph attack on William Barr. He says, as the leader of an institution that is supposed to be devoted to the truth, Barr needs to stop acting like a Trump spokesperson. In the words of the nation's founders, the Justice Department's Inspector General has let facts be submitted to a candid world. The FBI fulfilled its mission, protecting the American people and upholding the U.S. Constitution. Now those who attacked the FBI for 2 years should admit they were wrong. The truth is finally out, he says. And Attorney General Barr and others working alongside the Trump administration, they should admit that they're wrong. When we come back, we'll briefly comment on the impeachment hearing from yesterday and give you a quick update, too, on the coming election here in the UK, the Thursday election. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law, and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, one thing we know about the impeachment hearings is that they are certainly long on scholars, lawyers, career diplomats or bureaucrats, and very much short on fact witnesses. There's no fact witnesses. And so what a show trial it was yesterday to have the attorneys who were just a week or two ago, they were asking the questions, and then now yesterday they're testifying. So we get to hear the views of the staff lawyers, the staff attorneys. And of course, it's always weighted heavily in the favor of Democrats. They've got the two big attorney Democrat donors, the Democrat activist attorneys. And then there's the one attorney representing the Republicans. And we're supposed to believe there's no political bias in any of this. Representative Gates, he asked one of the Democrat attorneys, Daniel Goldman, about some of his activist support for Democrat candidates in the past. Here's that exchange, clip four.
Mr. Goldman, are you here as a partisan advocate for the Democrat position, or are you here as a nonpartisan investigator of the facts?
I'm here to present the report that we did on our investigation, which was totally and completely reliant on the actual evidence that we uncovered, the witness testimony, and the documents.
Are you a partisan?
I'm not a partisan.
Mr. Castro, how long have you worked for the House?
Since 2005.
And same question, Mr. Goldman.
For the House? Since earlier this year.
Mr. Castro, do you make political donations?
I don't remember any.
Mr. Goldman, same question. Do you make political donations?
I do, sir. I think it's very important.
Matter of fact, you've given tens of thousands of dollars to Democrats, right?
Sir, I think it's very important to support candidates for office. I think our
have you given over $100,000 to Democrats? I just want to know the number. I don't really care the basis. Have you given more than $100,000 to Democrats?
You don't care about it?
The basis. I just want the number. So it's tens of. I think Mr. Burke. Do you know how much money Mr. Burke has given Democrats?
I don't know, and I
would
don't.
Would it surprise you if it's more than $100,000?
Mr. Gates, I'm here to talk about this report.
So you gave tens of thousands, and Mr. Burke gave hundreds of, or more than $100,000. Do you think if you'd given more money, you might have been able to ask questions and answer them like Mr. Burke did? I guess it's something you're still pondering.
That's Representative Gates from Florida. Asking the lawyers, and they were quick, of course, to pile on Sondman after he went bad, saying that, well, you know, he did give a ton of money to Donald Trump's campaign. And here are these Democrat lawyers, activists for the Democrat Party, contributors to MSNBC or whatever else left-wing cause, left-wing media outlet, tens of thousands. In the case of Mr. Burke, Barry Burke, more than $100,000 in Democrat donations. And now here they are testifying. These are the witnesses in the impeachment trial or the impeachment hearing as to whether or not Donald Trump is fit to serve in the office of president. In a truly bizarre scene, Barry Burke, the one who's given more than $100,000 to Democrat causes, he began the day testifying about his young son, who says Donald Trump is a bad person. He needs to be impeached just because of that, just because of what my son, my little son, thinks about him. And so he's going on and on for a half hour or so as a witness. And then in the very next scene, after a break, in the very next scene of this hearing, then he's up asking the questions, Mr. Burke. Here's what one representative, Greg Stube, had to say about this particular Democrat activist attorney. Clip six.
Mr. Burke, a hired gun for the Democrats, got 30 minutes to spread his partisan rhetoric and then 45 minutes to cross-examine witnesses. That's 70 minutes more than most of the members of this committee who have been elected by their districts to serve in the United States Congress. And Mr. Burke is an unelected New York lawyer specifically brought in by the Democrats to give his opinion. A politically biased consultant who has given hundreds of thousands of dollars in federal elections to the likes of ActBlue, Hillary Clinton, Obama, and Biden. Mr. Burke gave over $5,000 alone to Hillary Clinton for her presidential race. No wonder why he has an axe to grind. Mr. Burke is a white-collar criminal defense lawyer who brags on his website of getting New York financial brokers deferred prosecution for tax fraud and fund managers off for insider trading charges. And Mr. Burke was able to say whatever he wanted to say without swearing an oath to his testimony that it would be truthful. So he can sit before this committee, not as a fact witness, and directly lie to the American people without any threat of criminal prosecution.
No fact witnesses. A show trial short on fact witnesses. And yet they go forward today with these two, judging by reports from the AP and others, these two articles of impeachment. There was a commentator. He used to work for, I think, the Obama people or Clinton, I forget. But CNN, Paul Begala, he said last night on CNN that this is not the last impeachment that we'll cover for Donald Trump. This is just the beginning, says this other Democrat operative. They may not have enough to convict in the Senate, but that won't stop them from impeaching and possibly impeaching again and then again and then again. And on it goes. Because, well, there might not be any wrongdoing. We might not have actual evidence of evil action, but we sure know there's evil intent. We sure can divine those evil motives. We see this storyline playing out over and again. Well, here in the UK, as I say, it's a big week as well with the elections coming up on Thursday. There was a humorous promo that Boris Johnson put out, having some fun with the actor that we played the clip from yesterday, Hugh Grant, as he took a scene out of one of Mr. Grant's movies to highlight how important this election is. There's not a lot of sound with the promo, so we didn't bring that up to play it for you. In any event, the AP says Britain faces... It faces most history-shaping election since World War II. It's the most testing and significant period in its modern history since the Second World War. That's the way the Associated Press sees it. And of course, it highlights just how divisive this particular election is as well. The polarized electorate now has a critical choice to make, but it seems unlikely the result, whatever it may be, will heal deep and toxic divisions that could last a generation or more. Deep and toxic divisions, but you do have to wonder, given what's happening in the United States, despite all this division, this temporary resurgence, you wonder if the resurgence is going to spread. In some ways, it has already, I think. But you wonder if it might spread, the U.S. resurgence, if it might spread over to the UK. This is Niall Gardner. I think he works in Washington now, but he's a British commentator talking about what life might be like in the post-Brexit era. Clip five.
I think that the policies that Boris Johnson has outlined are very good policies that will deliver, I think, tremendous benefits for the United Kingdom. I think that Britain's exit from the EU will begin a new era of British prosperity. I mean, Britain can return to being a great free trading nation. The United Kingdom can also control its own borders, control its own destiny, be once again, I think, a tremendous world power. And if you look at the economic situation for the UK at the moment, I think the prospects look very good. We have record levels, actually, of employment in place, some of the lowest levels of unemployment that we've seen in many, many decades. I do think that in the Brexit era, Britain is going to be a tremendous success.
Some of the same stats that Donald Trump is pointing out. The high level of employment, low unemployment, quite a bit of optimism there coming from a well-known commentator, a British commentator, Niall Gardner, commenting on one of the cable shows just yesterday. The Telegraph here in the UK, it says Jeremy Corbyn is much closer to becoming prime minister than voters think because he could get into Downing Street without winning a single extra seat, a Tory party memo has warned. So as optimistic as some in the Tory party are with respect to what might happen on Thursday, they're cautiously optimistic because if voters are lazy, those who support the Tories, and they don't turn out, could be a disastrous result. It says here the memo dated December 7th says the chances of a Corbyn-led coalition have been seriously underestimated as gains of just 12 seats by the SNP, Liberal Democrats, and other minor parties would be enough to remove Boris Johnson from number 10. Just a few seats going to some of these other smaller parties could swing it. It could swing it over in the direction of Jeremy Corbyn. There's another article here from the Telegraph saying that hundreds of the UK's wealthiest entrepreneurs are threatening to leave the country if Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party wins this week's general election. He was asked, by the way, Corbyn was, I think, in an interview last week, well, what about some of these wealthy businessmen who are saying that if you get in there, it's a disaster economically. Taxes are going to go up. Taxes are going to skyrocket. And then what if some of these wealthier citizens say, well, that's it. That's enough for me. I'm out of here. It says one of the UK's leading financial advisors said on Monday that a Labour victory on Thursday will trigger an exodus of the country's most successful and wealthiest individuals. Leaving not because they hate the country or they even hate the administration, but because the taxes would just be sky high. It says here, it talks about John Caldwell, the billionaire founder of Phones for You. He's criticized the Labour Party and the shadow chancellor, John McDonnell, on the radio. This was yesterday. Caldwell is a well-known philanthropist who made a statement that he wouldn't be the only one to leave if Labour got in there. Here's a little bit of a snippet from that exchange. This is actually just Caldwell, but he's there discussing this with the shadow secretary, clip 7.
You are definitely destroying confidence. Okay. Nearly every wealthy person I know is thinking of leaving the UK, including me if Labour get in. Now, if I end up leaving the UK, a country that I love, that I want desperately to remain in, I can guarantee you there will be hundreds that have left before me. The first thing is, when I hear the messages coming out of the Labour Party, it frightens me to death for the future of Britain.
But when you were John Caldwell and you had nothing, you want to make things.
I haven't finished.
It doesn't matter about the business.
I'd make it somewhere else. Yeah, I'd make it in a more friendly environment. Look, why would I stay in a political environment that's not encouraging entrepreneurship?
That's John Caldwell. He's a well-known philanthropist here in the UK. He's frightened at the thought of Labour gaining a majority or Jeremy Corbyn becoming prime minister. Why would he stay? He says there. Why would he stay if the environment is such that they don't encourage entrepreneurship? A lot riding on this particular election. And as I say, we're just a couple days away. We'll certainly keep you posted as the week unfolds. Well, we'll cut it off just a little bit short there today as we have a forum to get to downstairs. We thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.